Welcome to the Former Fat Friend podcast. I'm Casey.
I'm Lisa.
I'm Allie. And together we've lost over 370 pounds.
We all know what it's like to be the fat friend. And now we are sharing the ins and outs of our weight loss journeys.
And today it's all about me.
Yeah, it is. Over the next few weeks, we'll dive into each of our stories a little bit more. Today we are starting by getting to know Lisa.
So Lisa, tell us a little bit about your story and how you ended up where you are today.
I had gastric sleeve surgery in November of 2022. And at that time, I was 33 years old. And I had been overweight for pretty much as long as I can remember. I don't really ever remember not being fat. Like, I remember my mom arguing with my dad that we needed to do something about my weight. And my dad was like, no, it's baby fat. Like, she's gonna lose it. Like,
were your parents smaller people?
My mom has been everything from like a 2 to a 14. My dad's always been heavier. Mm. I've even tried now to go back and think like what, like how much of it was genetics and how much of it was like environment and like my relationship with food. And I don't really have answers to that. And I don't know that I need them at this point. Like, I just knew I was overweight. I've always been overweight. And I knew I wasn't athletically inclined. So I was clumsy. I was uncoordinated. And I didn't feel capable. I remember my mom will say this now that I'm an adult. She's like, you know, you wouldn't want to do these things. And I couldn't understand it now. And I kept trying to push you and push you. And she's like, I wish I had realized like you weren't good at them, or you weren't.
Didn't feel good when you did them.
I didn't feel good when I did them. Yeah, it wasn't fun for me. I like my worst fear was when the kids in the neighborhood wanted to play tag. Cause I'm like, well, I'm not.
Okay, well, tag sucks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can I say something mean?
Tag is the worst. I did because I knew I was going to be targeted. I knew I was always going to be the one that they were going to, because they knew they were going to get
the game is over.
The game is over. Yeah, exactly. They're going to come for me first because I'm not going to be able to outrun anybody. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm it, I'm not going to be able to catch anybody.
Right.
So I'm just going to be it forever. And that's not fun.
Do you remember at what point, like when you went on your first diet, or when was that first time where you realized like, there's something I should be doing
like you
about
tried to
this.
Take control?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I think when I was a kid, it was a lot of my mom saying things and me resisting them because it wasn't ever my choice or my decision. The first time I remember it being about me, I want to say a freshman or sophomore in college, and I went on Phentermine. And it was the very, very first time that I lost a significant amount of weight.
What is that?
It's a pill that you swallow that suppresses your appetite. It's essentially kind of like speed. Is
like,
that unfair
like ADHD
to say?
Medication? Like, is it like Concerta?
Similar, yeah. I literally didn't sleep. Like, it just had me completely wired. And I lost 55 pounds in 5 months.
Wow.
Which was huge. And then I kept having this pain in the center of my chest that would feel like it felt like heartburn. But extreme heartburn. And
that's
it's terrifying. Yeah. And I was always like told I was very dramatic as a kid, like, oh, you're being so sensitive. Oh, you're being so dramatic. Oh, you're fine. And I was really scared to say anything because I was like, oh, it's heartburn. I'm just dramatic. This isn't. And I finally went to the hospital. Then it was gallstones that were getting stuck. And they said that they had to take my gallbladder out pretty quickly. And the doctor said that I had hundreds of stones. They were like pouring out of my gallbladder. And that is often a result of rapid weight loss. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, cool. I finally did something to better myself and my health. And I had that. And then 3 weeks later, I had a kidney stone. And I was told they were all like.
And how old were you?
19 or 20.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Like terrifying.
Not ideal. It was not great. And then I moved to Nashville to finish college there and ended up gaining what I had lost on the Phentermine. And from that point on, it was just, I don't know, a decade or more of yo-yoing and trying everything and it not working. Trying Whole30, trying Paleo, trying Weight Watchers, trying Keto. And losing some and always gaining it back and sometimes more. I think the lowest I ever got was 183 and I felt like on top of the world.
What were you doing at that time?
I completely removed all gluten and dairy from my diet. I was working out pretty heavily, tracking every single morsel of food that I ate, being incredibly restrictive.
Like tracking for calories or?
Calories.
Okay.
And what's wild for me to think about now is that I was eating less calories then than I eat today.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it's not sustainable, right?
Yeah. It wasn't sustainable. And the same thing happened every time. I lost 20, I gained 30. Like it didn't, no matter what I did, it didn't stay off. The like vicious pattern that I remember the most is I would do everything meticulously perfectly throughout the week. And I would lose 1 to 2 pounds. And if I did anything, if I had one dinner out, if I went and had one happy hour, like one thing, it completely ruined all of the like hard work that I had done throughout the week. Never, ever live life or enjoy myself. It was like just the most awful, vicious cycle.
I think that's such a common experience for anyone who has struggled with their weight and has tried to diet. Is I always describe it as it feels very precarious, that like you do everything right and you have some little bit of success, but it's like balancing on a tiny little thread of like, you know, anything goes wrong and it all, you know, goes to shit.
Yeah.
Right. One, I'm a perfectionist. I am a type A, and it very much fed that mentality of like, if I have to be perfect all of the time or it's not good enough.
Yeah.
Because it didn't feel good enough because I just kept gaining
it. You weren't getting the result. Yeah.
Yeah. There was no result. It didn't really seem to matter what I did.
So when did bariatric surgery first come on your radar?
I think bariatric surgery was always kind of in the back of my mind, right? It was on the list of things. It was like, you can do Weight Watchers, you can do this, you can do this. Like, you could have bariatric surgery. I think when I first started thinking about it, it was scary. It was the last resort. It was a last resort. I don't feel that way now.
When you say, so were you in college and you were thinking this?
I would say probably young adulthood was when I first started thinking about it potentially being like, or just being, having awareness that it existed.
I think this is interesting because my experience was very different. I didn't even know that bariatric surgery was an option for me until I was 33 or 34. And when I found out, I was like, yes, immediately, I want to do this right now. So what do you think made you wait, you know, a decade before you finally decided to pull the trigger?
I think being aware that it existed,
right,
and it being a viable option for me were two very different things.
I see.
Yeah.
Like I knew that people did it.
Those people. Yeah.
Yeah. Those people. And I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it.
Mm.
There is a stigma and I fed into that stigma and I was like, I don't want, no, I shouldn't need this. I shouldn't need this, like, thing. I should just be able to do this. Why can't I do this?
It's like a fat thing. This is what we talked about last week.
Like, yeah,
the fact that you are objectively not lazy. You are trying, but you've convinced yourself and you have this core belief about yourself that you must be lazy or you must not be trying hard enough.
Yeah.
Because you're still fat.
If it's not working, it must be you.
Yeah. Because look at all these other people out there doing the things, getting their results, or look at these people that are just,
that just never got big.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I think I questioned it, but it really was more in my like late 20s, early 30s that I started asking questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had a boyfriend at the time and he was overweight and his mom, sister and brother had all had surgery.
Oh, wow.
And I remember asking him questions about it. Like, oh, I have actually considered it, like, and just like, you know, wanting to know more from him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a company called Medi Weight Loss. That was what I told myself was my like last ditch effort. I think I'd actually seen somebody that I follow on Instagram that was trying it. And you go every week. It's an incredibly restrictive keto diet, but like keto on steroids. Mm-hmm. Like, I think
you go every week to like a meeting?
No, you go every week to this facility, to this doctor, where they prescribed you phentermine by the week, but they wouldn't give you more than a week's supply at a time. So you had to go every week to get your refill and they gave you a B12 shot. And it was so restrictive. And I think I lost about 20 or 30 pounds. And I then went through a breakup with said boyfriend and gained all of it back plus some. And I kept putting on weight.
Mm.
And that was the point. I hit my highest weight. I hit 255 pounds. By the time I had my initial consult, I had gotten up to 257. But I remember seeing that 255 and being like,
It's just that kind of tipping point.
That was my tipping point. I had my initial consult July of 22 and had surgery November of 22.
Oh, so that was a fast process for you.
It was fast.
Wow. Okay.
It was definitely fast. Part of it was luck. Part of it was my surgeon was going on maternity leave. And I was like, can I have surgery before you go on maternity leave? And she was like, can you? Yes. Will I approve you if you're not ready? No. Like, if you can get with your nutritionist tomorrow and get this process started, yes, it is feasible. But like, I'm not rushing this. Mm-hmm. So we'll just see. Challenge accepted. Like, yeah, let's go.
Got it.
Bye.
So for people who don't know, there are multiple types of bariatric surgery. What made you choose to have sleeve surgery?
So my surgeon did sleeve and she did bypass. I tried very hard to get her to choose. All I wanted was for someone to tell me what I needed. And ultimately, I'm not necessarily proud of this, but I'll be honest about why I chose what I did. I was worried about failing. I was worried that it wasn't going to work. And if I started with bypass, there was nowhere to go from there. If I failed with a bypass, that's it. If I started with a sleeve and it didn't work, I could get a revision to a bypass. Mm. Once I knew, and I didn't tell anybody, I told my sister and my mom and a very, very small handful of people, but I kept that circle very small. And a lot of people I didn't tell until much closer to my surgery date because I didn't want the noise. I didn't want, this was for me. Mm-hmm. This was something I needed to do for myself.
What was your recovery like post-surgery?
I'm a wimp. So objectively, I am a pain wimp. It was fine. My mom stayed with me for the first like 5 days, I want to say. I did have pain. I hear people talk about like, I was worried, like, me. I didn't think they did anything.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was very manageable, but I was definitely in pain. And like, they have you in the recliner. And I remember being in the hospital and they went to adjust the recliner. And I think she moved it back too far or too fast and it stretched my stomach. And I yelled so loud that like people came into the room, like, is everything okay?
Oh, no.
Which is really just the story of my life.
So you have gastric sleeve surgery. Mm-hmm. You get through recovery. Were you on a liquid diet for that whole first month?
I wasn't, no. And that's a really good point. The way I describe it is that I'd say like I have the stomach of an infant, just like an infant starts on formula and then they go to oatmeal and they switch to baby food and then they slowly get solids. I'm like, I have to kind of retrain my stomach on how to digest food. So I had a week of liquids. And then I had a week of pureed foods and then a week of soft foods. And then I could slowly introduce pretty much everything as I tolerated it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like easy, at least for me, it's easy to forget because there have been so many wonderful things that have come out of surgery that I think sometimes I forget what some of those harder things were.
Yeah.
I was terrified, terrified of everything. And like, am I sipping this too fast? Is it going to come back up? I was so scared of throwing up, especially when I was healing and my incisions were so light. One of my incisions was incredibly painful. And I was just, constantly scared of like, am I doing this right? Is there too much? Is seasoning in this broth okay? I remember like texting my surgeon pictures of labels, like, is this broth okay to eat? And she's so lovely. She responded every time. Like, you're fine.
I want to talk emotional recovery.
Horrible. Horrible.
Your video, like, you've shared a video that's like so touching. I want to hear about what led to that.
I want to preface by saying I would 1 million times over do it all again. There is not a single ounce of me that regrets anything. Even in those darkest moments, I had no regrets. I think I say in that video, like, I'm sobbing and I'm like, I am 8 days post-op. The mental part is killing me, but I know I did the best thing for me.
So the video we're referencing, Lisa posted on her Instagram. She had videoed herself 8 days post-surgery and she was very emotional and definitely struggling at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the mental part has always been the hardest part for me. The physical part was not so bad.
So what was it during those first 8 days that made you get to that breaking point?
I can't say that there was a series of events mentally that got me to that point. I just, as a whole, it was very overwhelming. And I knew that I needed more help than I was getting. I could tell that I had reached a breaking point where I didn't know how to process all the things that I was feeling. I didn't know what they meant. And I knew that I needed a professional in the space who had experience with bariatric patients to be able to help me process everything I was experiencing.
Do you think if you could do it over, mm-hmm. would it have helped you to share this with more people in your circle?
I don't think that needed to change because those people wouldn't have known what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what was happening to me, and any of my friends and family didn't either. So just having more of them wouldn't have made a difference because I had I had great support in terms of love. I needed like
facts.
I needed facts. I needed objectivity. I needed somebody with an objective lens to come in and help explain to me what was going on and to like, yeah, kind of guide me, hold my hand and guide me through that. And that has been life-changing. Just retraining my brain from 34 years of core beliefs and lived experiences and reframing and shifting those things. I'm such a big proponent and supporter of therapy and doing the mental work. Anytime somebody says to me, oh, I know someone who gains it all back, my immediate response is they didn't do the mental work every single time.
I want to fast forward a few months. So you've had bariatric surgery. You're a few months in physically. How are you doing?
That was what I was.
Have you lost weight? How are you feeling?
So I had a very steady decline the entire time. I lost weight my first year. I never had any big stalls. I think the most I ever went without losing weight was maybe a week, which I'm told is not a stall. It felt like one.
Yeah. Well, when you in the beginning, you see your weight drop a lot every single day. So a week feels like a lifetime.
It feels like eternity. Yeah. And like, oh, this is it. This is over. I'm done. Every time the scale didn't move, it was terrifying. But I had a very steady loss. I never saw these massive drops. And I thought something was wrong with me. And I remember being like, well, when I was restricting and doing all these other things, I was losing 2 pounds a week. So like, what if I'm not doing any better on this, what the heck? Like, I should be seeing these drastic results. And everyone on my team was like, this is good. This is like good to have this slow, steady decline. It's going to help this be more sustainable for you. It's going to help with your skin. You know, like that, like it's good that you're consistently dropping. And you know, weight loss is not linear, and you see so many people's weight loss graphs where they're up down, and mine really was a very, very steady decline. I think the first month I maybe lost like 14 pounds, and then it was 12 pounds, and then most months I lost like 8 to 10 pounds a mm-hmm. month, and then it dropped to like 4 to 6 pounds a month. And right about my year mark is when I kind of stopped losing. And I remember my dietitian saying at my 3 month that she was so excited for my 3 month because I was going to be on top of the world. And 3 months is when her patients are like, I have so much energy. I have so much this. And it didn't happen for me. I remember like disappointing her. Like I got into my 3 month and I'm like, I don't feel what you described I would feel. And she was visibly like, really? Oh. And then again, I felt like there was something wrong with me. I was like, I think I just was like, I don't know, a little slow to the party, but it did pick up. And around 3 months is when I got a personal trainer, which is very early.
3 months?
At 3 months.
Wow. That is very early.
Had you been working out before that?
No. Maybe walking.
Nothing like regular. Definitely
no like weightlifting. No. And I think I felt like I had wasted time. Like, wait, those first 3 to 6 months are my highest potential for losing weight. And I've just squandered the first three. Like,
did you not know, or you didn't know where to start, or you didn't have energy? Or was it just like a thing you didn't think of until you were like, oh, I need to be doing this?
I think I was just like, I'm just a baby. You know, like,
It's a lot. It's a lot to handle all at once. It really is to think about, you know, changing your diet and figuring out how to eat and what to eat and when to eat and how to drink water, and then throwing exercise in on top of that, especially if you don't really know what you're doing. I had the same experience of being like, I don't know what I'm doing in the gym.
Literally, water alone was a full-time job, truly, with like the alarms and like making sure I got my intake in. And I wasn't an athlete prior. I remember my surgeon a week post-op being like, yeah, get on the treadmill, go. And I was like, what? Already? I have to heal. Like, I can't. I'm just a baby. What do you mean? And she's like, no, move your body. You're good. So yeah, I think there was this like, let me do one thing at a time. Let me make sure I feel good about hydration and food and like what my body can tolerate. And then let's work on this. And I started really slow. I think I started like two 30-minute sessions twice a week was what I did. And then I signed up for ClassPass. And I was like, I knew that I loved...
What do you, just for the record, what, how many minutes a week do you think you work out now?
It's a lot more than two 30-minute sessions.
60.
Last week, I worked out 6 days, six of seven. And so an average of an hour each time. So six.
Amazing.
You're an athlete now.
So from an outside perspective, I think fitness has been a huge part of your journey. And so I'm curious how you think starting with that personal trainer so early on shaped your process and your journey and kind of where you are now.
I was really lucky because my surgery center had partnered with a gym. I had trouble finding a trainer because a lot of trainers want to also give input on nutrition. And I found that really challenging. I went to several consults with different trainers. And I remember one guy asking me how much protein I was getting in a day. And I said, my current goal is 60 grams of protein. And he looked at me and he was like, we got to double it.
And I didn't know that. I've never worked with a personal trainer. I had no clue that they want to tell you what to eat.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They absolutely do. I remember him following up with me and like asking me, like, was I going to work with him? And I said, hey, I don't want to be your bariatric guinea pig. You don't have the knowledge. Yeah, no. And I remember him like backpedaling and being like, oh, wait, no, I looked it up on the internet.
And I was like, no.
I just don't. And my surgeon was like, we actually partnered with a gym where we put parameters in place and they understand like they are not to touch your nutrition. They're not to do this. So I was very, very fortunate in that. And I like having a professional. And I also think too, for me, I knew that I wouldn't show up for myself, but I would show up for somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting a trainer for me, there was a time there was somebody counting on me. I had made a commitment to somebody else. I didn't trust myself, right? I had committed to myself and made myself promises and set goals that I did not meet my entire life.
Yeah.
And I couldn't count on myself, but I wasn't willing to disappoint somebody else.
But I think that self-awareness is huge to, you know, it's not a negative, right? To say like, oh, I wouldn't have shown up for myself. It's saying I know myself well enough to know what I need to be able to show up. And you did that.
And I think that's huge in finding out what works for you. I knew that group classes and things like that were what worked for me. I did a trial class pass and I was like, I'm going to find something that I enjoy that's good for me. Previously, prior to surgery, anytime movement was part of the equation, it was 40 minutes on the elliptical. And I was miserable every single time. Yeah. You will not catch me on an elliptical today. I can't tell you the last time I got an elliptical. It's not for me. And I felt like I had to do all of this cardio. But after surgery, I was like, no, let me take the time to figure out what I like. What do I like? What kind of movement do I enjoy? And I knew I had taken this cardio dance class when I was in college in Nashville and I loved it. And I was like, I'm going to find one like that. It's not Zumba. It was like hip hop. Let me shake my ass and have so much fun. Truly, I'm serious.
A thought I've never had.
I don't have rhythm and whatever. I didn't want to like sasse and salsa and whatever. But I just wanted to like.
Just shake your booty.
You want to like my pop, booty lock, to and like drop
Lizzo.
It.
Yeah, exactly. We literally do pop, lock, and drop.
No, you don't. Oh, no.
We're going to need to get a video of that and then put that in this video of the podcast.
Yeah, I got you.
I hope so. It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, please check our show notes for a video of Lisa.
Step one, pop, locking, and dropping. Lock.
Anyway, I figured out what makes me feel good. I learned that I like lifting. I like feeling strong. I love barre because I love seeing the difference in my core strength and my stability and my balance and just being able to do things with my core that I never could before. And I love personal training because I love having someone that's like tracking all of my progress and my growth and paying attention. And I love that I don't have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. I used to joke about worrying that I would become a person who was so into fitness because I was probably just jealous of those people that I was like, I don't understand how people like move their body on purpose. I can't picture that. And now when I say, you know, I work out 5 to 6 times a week and people are like, wow, that's a lot. And literally I'd be like, I don't think it's unrealistic to move your body for 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
But also there's a difference between being athletic or being into fitness as your personality and making space for fitness, which is what you do.
Sure. It's interesting because it went from being a chore to being a non-negotiable for me. People talk about their non-negotiables.
Yeah.
I have a fear that if I get out of the habit, I will not get back into it. it has become a habit. It has become part of my routine and my day. And I know that I feel better when I do it. And even like the other week, I do some writing in my work and I was having writer's block. And I texted my editor and I was like, I'm going for a run to try and clear my head. And that's I'm going to try to write this script again in an hour. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to move my body. It makes me feel good to feel strong. And it's no matter how busy we are, my like colleagues know, hey, no, I'm stopping down for an hour because I signed up for this bar class. And if I have to come back online for 2 hours late at night because I didn't finish what I needed to get done for the day, then that's what I'll do because moving my body is a non-negotiable. And it's too slippery of a slope for me to be like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Turns into like the next day and the next day and the next day. And that's why I like the classes.
Yeah.
That's why I don't do stuff on my own because I know me. Mm-hmm. I do some stuff on my own. Like now I'll go run on my own. No one's forcing me to run except you guys. They're not forcing me.
Except for that sweet bus.
It's really the sweet bus. That's kidding me.
Okay. So I want to switch gears a little bit. So you are young, single, social.
I'm single, guys.
How has your social life and dating life changed post-surgery?
Social life was really, it was all really, really hard. I remember feeling a few months post-op like, I'm never going to want to eat out at a restaurant again. Mm. This is too hard. This is too hard to navigate. I'm on a first date and I don't want to explain to him why I ordered a kid's meal and like, do I tell him? Do I not tell him? If I tell him, then I have all the power and I control the conversation. But like, does he need to know my business? Like this internal dialogue constantly of like, what's the right move and not knowing? And like, why does everything in life revolve around food and alcohol? And like, I don't know how to order anymore. I don't know what I need. I got over it, obviously. And it became a new normal. But there was definitely a period of like, I didn't enjoy eating out. I was like, I don't want to go to a restaurant. This isn't fun. This is stressful. And dating is interesting because prior to surgery, I was always terrified I was catfishing someone.
Hmm.
Because I'm very much an online dater. I don't know how people meet people in the real world. But I've always had a smaller face. My biggest fear was that I was going to see someone in person and they were going to be like, oh, wow, she's bigger than I thought she was.
Hmm.
I was always so worried about like, do they realize I'm a big girl?
How did you like set up your dating profile so that you weren't doing that? Like, did you include unflattering photos of yourself?
Did you have any nude photos?
Just strictly nude. Only nude. Full body nude.
Allie, that's a different kind of dating site.
I just, not unflattering. I made sure there were full bodies.
Yeah.
Now, were they full bodies that I had retouched and like whatever? Obviously. But I just wanted you to know, like, hey, I'm curvy.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, I think, when you are overweight. It's like wanting to put your best face forward and best photos out there, but also like make sure that you don't feel like you're catfishing someone. It's tough. And it's something that you don't really have to think about when you're not overweight.
When I was always told like, you have a pretty face.
Yeah.
You have a pretty face, you know.
It's like a consolation prize.
Right. Like you're pretty for a big girl. It's like now people are like, well, you were always beautiful. And I'm like, I know I was. No one said size and beauty were synonymous. Like, but no, so I always would start with just the face because I'm like that first picture that they see.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, wait, I need you to see that I'm pretty. And then you can see how big my body is. Like that was the way that my brain was working. So I always had that fear. And then after surgery, that fear went away. So I think one of the biggest things I noticed in dating after surgery is that it still sucks. Dating's so awful. But I'm no longer worried about what the other person sees.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's because you think your body is acceptable now or because you don't care?
Or because you like your body now?
Maybe like D, all the above. I think I am more sure of myself now. I think I'm kind of like, this is me, take it or leave it.
Yeah, that's a good place to be. So in about a year, you lost 110 pounds,
yep,
which is incredible. You are now 16 months post-op.
Yep.
So you are a couple months into maintenance.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
It depends on the day. I remember when I found out I was in maintenance. I asked.
When I found out, was there an announcement? Did you get it in a newsletter?
Did you take a test?
I quit.
You can't.
I was asking questions about maintenance to my dietitian, and I said, how do I know when it's time? Like, how do I know when I'm in maintenance? And I just remember her looking at me and saying, you're already there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was definitely a shift for me. There was this moment where I had to find something else to motivate me to keep going that wasn't the scale. Because I weigh myself every day. And that can be controversial. I stand by it. It's a check-in for me. It's a data collection point. Anytime I've been away from the scale for too long is when things have gotten out of control. So I have worked very, very hard for the scale to not dictate my day, not dictate my mood, not dictate my worth in increments of 1 to 2 weeks at a time. So I never had to experience the scale not moving for more than a 1 to 2 week period. And that I learned was a new hurdle I had to get over, because once I hit maintenance, the scale was never moving. It was in the same like 2 pound range. I don't fluctuate that much. And then it was like, wait a minute, I have to do this for the rest of my life without the motivation of the scale going down. Mm-hmm. I have to find something else. What's going to keep me going? And I think it became like body composition and strength training for me. It's like there are other measures. I did my first like body scan to see what are my fat percentages and what's my lean muscle mass, and paying more attention to what weights I'm lifting in the gym and what exercises I'm having to modify and bar, and like finding these other measures and other, I had to set new goals. Poor little rich girl, I hit every single goal that I set for myself in my first year of surgery.
That's amazing.
Like that's huge. And then I was like, well, now what? I need new goals.
Yeah.
So I set new goals. I had to find something else. So maintenance has been a bit of a ride, and I still think I'm navigating it. I still work through, like, I have disordered eating habits, and I don't, that's maybe another episode. And I have things that I developed after surgery, like in terms of like purging, throwing up. Like that was never something I did before surgery. And then after surgery, it became so easy. It was effortless. It was like I would open my mouth and food would come out. And so it became like a solution for me of like, uh-oh, I overdid it. It's okay. I'll just throw it up.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, it was like, hey, no, you're giving eating disorder. Like, let's get that in check. So, you know, there are still things that I'm working through. And I think it's a lifelong thing. And I'm tracking right now because I'm training for a race and I'm trying to make sure that I'm fueling properly. Mm-hmm. And I know that tracking can be really triggering for me, and I can get hyper-focused on the numbers, and it can lead more to restriction than to nourishment. And so like I work with a dietitian and a therapist on how to find that balance. And like it, for me, it's very lifelong, but it's cool to be in maintenance. And I don't think I would have said that in month one or two of maintenance.
Yeah.
But it's starting to feel cool. It's starting to feel just like, wait, no, I did it.
Does it feel weird to you to not be like searching for something with that? Like, what's the next solution?
Yeah.
In that way?
I was thinking the same thing. Like, I think for a lot of us, we spend our entire lives in the pursuit of weight loss, and it's never ending because we never are successful to the point of saying, okay, now I'm done. So when you are finally successful, does that feel weird to no longer have something to pursue?
I haven't reached a point where there's nothing that I'm pursuing, because I am very much still like, okay, now that I've lost the weight, what is my body capable of? Yeah. Oh, can I run a 5K? Yeah, I sure can. Can I run 5 miles? Oh, hey, I can. How about 10 miles? TBD, I'll let you know April 7th. But like,
you can. Spoiler alert, you can.
I will. Can I lift this? Can I do this? Like, I want to go skydiving. I want to go rock climbing. Like, there are all these things that I would have never even considered or was told I couldn't do prior, that I'm now like, my world is like split wide open. So I'm not pursuing weight loss, but I'm an ambitious person, and I'm very goal oriented. And I think for me, I get to pursue new things. I get to pursue things that were never in the realm of possibility for me because my weight is not holding me back anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's been really exciting for me to see you be on this journey, even though I wasn't obviously here at the beginning, because I think our histories are just so different. And it's fun for me to watch someone realize all of the things that they're capable of. And especially fun when I know that when you say like you weren't sure you could run a 5K, you didn't mean it so that we would reinforce you and tell you. You really didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And watching you grow as like an athlete has been really cool for me, because I don't remember that part of my journey. It's always been there. So watching a full grown adult woman become an athlete is really, really inspiring.
Second that.
Thank you. It makes me uncomfortable when you call me an athlete.
You are.
I don't know what else you would call yourself. You absolutely are. Well, your story is incredible. It's inspiring. It's inspiring to me, and I know you well, and I know it's inspiring to so many other people.
Just to put things in perspective, I followed Casey before I ever knew her, and Casey was like one of my biggest inspirations. And then to develop a friendship and like sisterhood, and to have somebody that was such a like inspiration for me say that back to me, it's like a cool feeling.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Did anyone bring tissues?
Well,
how do you wrap up a podcast? Where do you go from
like that
there?
I think.
Well, thank you for sharing your story, Lisa. It is incredible. And I think one of the things that I love about this group is how different all of our stories are and our experiences are. And so next week we will be talking about Allie's story. And then in the next one, we'll talk about mine. So we hope you'll join us next week. And thanks for tuning in. If you want to follow us on social media, I'm on Instagram at @maintainingcasey.
And I am at @leaningintolisa.
I'm at @allie'slosingit_RNY.
We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Love you. Mean it.